Welcome to the Star Coalition podcast. My name is Luke Kramer, Executive Director of the Star Coalition. We are so glad you are here with us today. We love to meet with some of the greatest minds in advocacy and research and the treatment of those living with central nervous system disorders, such as schizophrenia, bipolar, depression, and other indications. And we are very excited today to have a dear friend and colleague, Dr. Shashuka Malhotra. She is the founder and medical director of the Neurobehavioral Clinical Research. And, you know, we've had many wonderful hours of talking with each other, Dr. Malhotra, and you have probably one of the most focused, passionate views towards the individuals that you're serving than most anyone I've met within the research circles. We have talked extensively about the challenges that we have with individuals who are living with mental illness, who are living with substance use disorders. And I just have to say that I think I've seen a part of you that is compassionate and understanding beyond most other people that I know. And I just want you to know how much I appreciate the work that you're doing and the direction that you're taking with your work. So I just want to say that first. But
Thank you, Luke. And we inspire each other. That's how surrounded by good people like you and Carol.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, tell me a little bit about how and why did you get into the research arena? I know for a lot of people, it's never maybe even thought about as an option as they move into medical school and so forth. But where did you kind of find your way into this?
So I don't think we talked about it ever, Luke, but when I was in medical school, my grandma, who was a freedom fighter, actually, for India, very, very strong lady I looked up to, suffered from Alzheimer's disease. And there was not much known. There were not many treatments available for that. And there was a lot of stigma in India among community as well. So basically, I saw a strong woman becoming childlike. And it was, I think, it changed me throughout my medical school as a physician. And I decided to become a psychiatrist, and I wanted to find treatments for Alzheimer's. So my path was set in third year of medical school, and since then, I focused on that.
Can you tell me a little bit about the work that you guys do specifically at the Neurobehavioral Clinical Research? What is some of the work that you guys are involved with in clinical research?
So we pretty much work in Alzheimer's disease. You know, that is the endemic in our society and the biggest need to get new treatments out. We work for pretty much for depression, bipolar, schizophrenia. I really feel there is such a big need for patients and family to participate in Alzheimer's disease because we can really find new, better treatment or understand the disease better if we have more participation. Look at oncology field. Look at breast cancer. When I went to medical school, people used to die of it. Now people, you know, they just kind of go through a period, but most of them live and live a very productive life. And the reason is in oncology, pretty much 90% patients participate in research. And I feel we need the same kind of involvement from the doctors and patients and families and support the mental health research.
You bring up a really good point. There seems to be a disconnect between our mental health communities and clinical research. You know, like you said, in oncology, it's offered as a clear option sometimes for individuals who are first diagnosed with some type of cancer, that research is on the table along with, you know, radiation or chemotherapy or, you know, diet or exercise. But generally, when individuals have a first diagnosis, or even if they've been in the treatment realm for years, research is never talked about. Why do you see that there is a disconnect between the conversations around research and those who are living with brain disorders?
So again, that's, you know, Luke, most of us who work in this field, we learn a few things that our mind is very precious to all of us. Mm-hmm. and especially to our mental health patients. People will let you work on your stomach, let you work on your body, but their mind, they feel they don't want anybody to take control of that. And I think that creates a lot of stigma for patients themselves. But there is, as such, a significant stigma for mental health itself. You know, what are the new senses where that majority of patients do not reach out for 8 or 10 years to go to see a doctor or a psychiatrist to take care of mental health? So as it is for even the clinical disease, there is so much stigma. Research is way behind. Most physicians who treat this disorder, most care providers who treat this disorder themselves don't have that much, they just don't have that much investment into the medication part of it. They don't trust pharmaceutical companies, and they don't want to talk about it. So all those things together create this disconnect, I believe.
Do you see that, and you are in Ohio, do you see Yes. that there are some unique challenges in your communities around mental health or substance use? And have you seen perhaps a progress in stigma, or do you still feel that it's a huge barrier that we have?
Huge issue. Yeah, I do believe that compared to Europe, you know, I think we are very behind where we do not see as an individual mind-body connection. I believe the stigma is not only amongst the patients and their family. I think they perceive that stigma even in the hospital they go to, their doctors, their nurses, the community, social workers, provider. There is a sense of not believing mental health illness, at least in these smaller community, as a real illness. Most people would not come out and say it, but that is true. We do not take care of our addicts as if they have a disorder. We behave as if it is in their willpower to stop if they want to make a good choice. We consider it as a moral choice. So all those issues create a sense of, you can just, you know, get the willpower and get better for depression. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you have a good choice that you can stop using the drugs. I stop using alcohol. I don't use it. Why do you need to keep using it? So I think that kind of behavior amongst family creates a stigma. And moreover, mental health patients have a lot of challenges. You don't see a physical pain. I always give this example, and I think you have heard it. If you have a broken leg, nobody will ask you to run 5 miles an hour on treadmill. But if you are severely depressed, people expect you to smile and behave normally, go to work, and be pleasant. So there are so many challenges with mental health illness because you cannot see, you cannot do a blood test where you can have other people believe it. You can't do an MRI, which you can tell people that, hey, I truly have this disorder. And that creates a whole sense of distrust among people. The only way we can fight that is with education, and that's what we do in our community, one patient at a time. Like I have in my office, when I hire people, the first step is that you would not have any kind of judgment towards my patient. And invariably, everybody will say, oh no, I love mental health patients. I would never have judgment towards it. You find 80% people have judgment how they treat a mental health patient versus a cardiac disease patient. And I think it comes not only because people are bad people. I feel there is just so much advancement we need in mental health field. When somebody, as providers, we get a lot of energy when we are able to fix things for people, we are able to treat them. Mental health patients come with some behavioral challenges, and when people feel frustrated, when they feel they cannot treat you, they cannot fix you, then they want to make it your problem. Hmm. You must be bad. That's why you're not getting better. Do you see that? And it even happens in I've seen a counselors doing that. I've seen doctors doing that. I've seen nurses doing that. So we have to change the whole view about how we treat mental illness, how we perceive mental illness in community. So we do one person at a time.
That is it's a very insightful way to look at it. You know, it does seem to be that if someone is diagnosed with cancer, lung cancer, that particular cancer is a part of who they are. But yet if you're diagnosed with schizophrenia, or let's say that you may be addicted to opioids, it becomes mm-hmm. the entire identity of that person, not just a piece of who they are. It becomes their entire identity. So everything that people look through the lens towards that person, and I'm sure from that individual, the lens that they're viewing the world is completely enveloped by that particular disorder. So I know that we've had some really, I think, difficult discussions, but thorough discussions about substance use and maybe the epidemics that you're seeing in your own community. So can you talk a little bit about maybe the substance use epidemic that you are seeing, and how is research playing a role in trying to conquer some of the issues that we're having in that circle?
Yes. You know, Luke, we have had a lot of discussion. I always reach out to you, and you always find some ways for me to at least progress further. It is a big issue in Ohio. I have patients who have seen 150 people they know die in last 8-10 years of opioid addiction. You know, young cousins, friends, family's friends. We all know that our mental health system is broken for people to get help regarding it. What we found when we started doing addiction research is that patients who stayed with us for a year or so while participating in research, we were able to see the human side of those patients. I remember when I wanted to do this trial, a lot of my nurses and counselors who are very, very compassionate and dedicated people, but they were afraid of this population because of the behavior you get involved in when you're an addict. Most addicts will tell you that. It's not them, it's the addiction. Sure. But as you said, it becomes their whole identity. So a lot of people were worried, like, if we have addiction patient here, it would create chaos, and how would that be their quality of life or other patients' quality of life? And I remember I just asked them to trust me with that one trial, and I can tell you every team member after the study was over came to me personally and said, they are thankful that I pushed them to take that trial, because I always believe if you take addiction out of an addict, you see a highly sensitive, really kind-hearted, wonderful people. Mm-hmm. They cannot deal with day-to-day life, and they are biologically likely to abuse a agent, and that's their way of self-treating themselves.
You know, you even mentioned that you had worked with someone who may have seen 150 people die of overdosing or other. Imagine the trauma from any one of us to see one person or 10 people or a dozen, much less dozens of individuals die around us that we love, how much trauma alone that would produce. And then in turn, if you have a substance use disorder and you have that addiction gene, the drive to continue to use to cope with the trauma that you have experienced. It seems this horrible cycle that somehow has to be broken, and it is not an easy thing to do. And mostly when you're living sometimes in communities that is just saturated with the ability to have access to different drugs to sometimes self, you know, is a self-coping mechanism.
Exactly. And I mean, I don't know how much time we have, but I just today had a wonderful patient who, when he came to me, he was using 3 to 4 grams of IV heroin, and his life was in disarray. He had lost job. He was almost he was living with his mom. Otherwise, he would be homeless. And this is 3 years down the road. He is still on some doses of Suboxone, but he is married. He has a great job. But now he has a teenager who was born when he was going through this addiction problem, and the teenager's mom is all still an addict. So it was very interesting to see. I learned something new today, that how frustrated he was getting with this 14-year-old who is not taking the help he's trying to give him. And when I was trying to talk him into it, that, okay, what he couldn't understand is he didn't have the chance. His mom was a cocaine addict and she was prostituting himself. So he grew up in addiction field, and he tried to put a new life for his family. And he can't understand why his 14-year-old would throw it on his face and go somewhere. So then I had to bring it to his attention that now that he's clean, he is judging his own son. He could have the same problem, and he is 14-year-old. And it was very interesting for the first time for me to see. Usually I find addicts or people who have gone through mental health situation, they are very sensitive to these things. But it's so easy because we don't see the hurt. We don't believe in the biological basis of it. We feel it is somehow in our choice. He himself was making that error of just being a dad, that, okay, I didn't even get what I am giving to you, and you are throwing it. Why are you using the drug? So it's very interesting phenomenon, you know, this just like placebo. I think the stigma related to mental health, it just opened my eyes today, was beyond people just not wanting to understand it or being ignorant about it. Even the people who have those issues can have stigma against it, maybe out of fear.
Yeah, there's just a stark parallel, and that it is not a fault of someone's personality or strength. There are things that can overtake each one of us, and that require a tremendous amount of support and encouragement. And as we kind of conclude, you know, it's interesting that there seems to be some movement within research and through some of our pharma sponsors to look into ways that we can make a larger impact in substance use through clinical research. Are there some specific things that you're seeing happening within our pharma groups to put more focus on ways to create new therapies that can help with offset the substance use, or maybe to get people transitioned off of their drug of choice? It seems like that we're making some headway there.
Yes, we are. I think over last 5-6 years, I'm able to participate in more protocols which are trying opioid detox, opioid dependence, outpatient treatments, cocaine dependence. There are some methamphetamine dependence trials going on. So I think we are going in the right direction. We just need to do more, and we need to have more participation and less stigma related to it.
And again, I guess participation is a huge thing. If we don't have individuals who are knowledgeable about clinical research, that have opportunities to know that as an option for them, and then pursue perhaps being a part of a study, we cannot find cures. We cannot find new therapies that can alleviate the symptoms or the desires around substance use and mental health. So I'm glad you brought that up. There is a need for more individuals to reach out and participate, right? Do you agree?
Absolutely. We need people to be their own advocate. And if they want to be part of this treatment team to get better treatments, to have less stigma, to have a better understanding of the illness, they need to participate in research, because research is a scientific experiment where you not only help maybe future generations, but you learn a lot more about yourself in a scientific medical way, which sometimes doesn't happen in clinical practices in mental health.
And it's good to see that there's more emphasis in the substance use area around this as well. And we hope that we can continue to see more investment in the future around new therapies and assisting individuals with substance use, as well as mental illness. And as even the stories that you've told today, these two things are so closely linked. It's sometimes impossible to separate the two, and that we do really need that integrated care. Well,
absolutely.
I just want to say thank you again, Dr. Malhotra. You have really been a guiding light for me and for many others in clinical research throughout the nation to see not only a lot of the conversations that you bring around about how women can be more empowered in this field, looking at the next generation of individuals who can come into research, but also knowing with the people that you bring around you and your expectations of others within research, that it is about compassion, it is about dignity, it is about care, and it is about making sure that the individual who is coming in to either be a part of a clinical research study or even to be educated more about issues that they or a loved one are dealing with, that that those individuals do not wake up with the choice of having an addiction, that if they could erase that from their from who they are, they would do it in a heartbeat. But we have a lot of work to do. And I just want to say thank you for the work that you're doing.
Thank you. Yes. No, thank you, Luke and Carol Mintz, for the work you're doing. You have, you know, we all have these passions among us, but you have given a purpose by having a structure about how we who work in research area can be advocate for our patients and their family and increase education. So you are my guiding light. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Talking to me.
Well,
thank
you. You're wonderful. And again, if you would like to know more about neurobehavioral clinical research and the work that they're doing, please check out their website. It's nbclinicalresearch.com. And there you can learn about some of the trials they're doing and just give you a kind of insight about what clinical research is happening, not only in Ohio, but it's a great reflection of what needs to be going on throughout the nation. So thank you, Dr. Malhotra, and thank you guys for joining us today on the Star Coalition podcast. We do like to get together and talk with thought leaders like Shashuka, Dr. Malhotra, and mental health and other areas and discuss topics that really do affect each one of us. Continue to follow the Star Coalition on social media and on our website at www.thestar.org, T-H-E-S-T-A-R-R.org, and we will see you soon. Thank you.